out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 22nd of January, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And of course, as it's Monday, I am joined by Jez Turner from the London Forum. Jez, how are you doing today?
Hello, how goes the world? Thanks Pretty for good. Listening in.
Pretty good. The last podcast we did went down really well. I'd say we always get positive comments when you come on, Jez, and people always ask to hear more from you.
Good.
Good stuff all around. What have you got for us this week then?
Well, let's look at history, shall we? On this day, in 1999, a Christian missionary, Graham Staines, and his two sons were burnt to death by Hindus in eastern India. 1918, this day, Ukraine was proclaimed a free country. So this is Ukraine's National Day. So hello to all you Ukrainian listeners.
I'm sure we have some.
And of course, there's lots of Ukrainians who don't live in Ukraine. They live in Canada or Britain. There's quite a lot in Yorkshire who fought for the SS and managed to get over here or were here as prisoners working on the farms for many, many years until after the Second World War and just settled down here. So hello to them. 1879 this day, famous battle, immortalized in a film that every British schoolboy knows about, and it's Rorke's Drift, the Battle of Rorke's Drift. This is a battle between British soldiers, 150 British soldiers, many of them wounded, and recovering at a mission station in Rorke's Drift, and a Zulu army of about 5,000. And the Zulus came down this hill, and they sent waves and waves against this little British outpost. And the British guys, discipline, a bit of cold steel, kept their nerves, and they fought them off. So that's a tremendous feat for the white race. 11 Victoria Crosses were issued, and many other decorations. And these soldiers were heroes. One of these soldiers, Victoria Cross holders, ended his days as a cloakroom attendant at the British Library, British Museum in London.
Was there a film made of that? Is that the film Zulu?
It's called Zulu. There's two films, Zulu Dawn, which is about the Battle of Zulandwala, where a huge Zulu army overwhelms British troops who haven't been issued with ammunition. And then this army moves on to wipe out this British outpost, and that's where they're halted, and that's where they're halted, and that's where the Zulu uprising begins to fail because of these few British soldiers at Rorke's Drift. The stiff upper lip, you see, the stiff upper lip.
I was thinking of Michael Caine. I thought there was a film Zulu with Michael Caine, or is that a different
battle?
Yeah,
he's in it. He's a Jew, but he plays a white guy. It's always the way, isn't it? But yeah. Oliver Reed's in there, actually. Oliver Reed is a malingerer. He's a malcontent malingerer in the hospital pretending he's ill. He is a bit ill, you know, a few injuries. And he tries to sleep out the battle. And then decides, no, this is no good. And he joins in and does a heroic few actions, you know, does a heroic. We'll discuss Oliver Reed later on. Now, jumping forward, 1973, famous court case in America, Roe versus Wade. This is when the U.S. Supreme Court legalized abortion, basically for any reason. It then became a sort of life choice, became a sort of thing you do for the fun of it, you know. This is where the floodgates really opened.
Yeah, it was a really important court case, that. It gets mentioned a lot. And people Rovers in Britain don't really aren't really aware of it, but that was a real turning point in America, I think.
Mm. Let's jump around a bit. 871, this is a battle between Vikings, Danelaw Vikings in England, and the West Saxons, the Battle of Basing. Battle of Basing. And we lost, I'm sorry to say. The Brits lost that one. Basingstoke, what an awful place Basingstoke is. 1371, King Robert II was crowned King of Scotland. 1859, 25-year-old Brahms, first piano concerto, this is in D minor, was premiered in Hanover. That's a very interesting piece of music, very powerful. This piece was prompted and influenced by the suicide of his friend Richard Schumann. Now, let's get on to some really interesting stuff here. 1510. What happened on this day in 1510? Well, the Jews were expelled from Colmar in Alsace, right? This is a city-state, Colmar. It's in Alsace. And this is interesting because this ban stayed in place even after Josel of Rosheim campaigned against it. Now, who was Josel of Rosheim? Well, he was his official title was Jewish governor, ambassador for all Jews in the Holy Roman Empire and elsewhere. He was a sort of roving ambassador for Jewish supremacy. If you think of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Antifa, the Jewish lobby, the Community Securities Trust, the campaign against anti-Semitism, he was all that. He was that. And he was sort of a court Jew, and the Jews would pay money to the Austro-Hungarian emperor in return for not just equal rights, but more rights. They had more rights than the poor old white people. And Josel of Rosheim, he campaigned for special privileges for Jews. And he hated Martin Luther. He hated Luther. Of course, the Jews thought that by encouraging factionalism in Christianity, that they would be able to have more power. But Luther was a very clever man, very intelligent, very brave. I remember him saying, when he was asked, "Why do you do this?" "I stand here because I can do no other." He can't, he has to do it. He has to do what's right in his view, whatever the consequences. And he wrote a book called On the Jews and Their Lies. And Josel, he pressured the Strasbourg government to ban the book, and it was banned. It was banned. And here's a quote from Josel's memoirs. "How dare Luther, how dare this man write that about Jews? May his body and soul be bound up in hell." So there we go. If you're hated by the Jews, it means you're doing something right.
he was a real philo-Semite for years. Martin Luther King really supported the Jews for a long time, and he thought that they could be converted to Christianity. And then before the end of his life, he realized that that was all complete folly. And then he wrote On the Jews and Their Lies. It's a fantastic book. I heard one of the quotes from it earlier this weekend, where he says that the best thing for the Jews is to baptize them in the river with a big stone around their necks.
He said also, "Who helps the Jews is doomed to perdition." So that's interesting, that. And then we can jump forward a few years to 1575. Elizabeth I, the Queen, grants Thomas Tallis and William Byrd a monopoly of the music printing industry, which means you've got a lifetime income, quite a nice lifetime income for those two people. And they were both Catholics, so that's interesting. You've got a Protestant queen, and she sees across religious boundaries, and she sees these two songwriters, musical composers, and she sees their talents, and she rewards them. So this is an example of white people getting on together, whatever their sectarian differences.
Is that the same queen that got rid of all the blacks in the country?
The blackamoors, yes, there was about 37 of them, and she got rid of them.
She was pretty good.
Yeah. Let's jump forward to another Jewish expulsion on this day. It's a good day for expelling the Jews, listeners. Marshal Oscar von Lubomirski. Oscar von Lubomirski, I'll repeat that. He expelled Jews from Warsaw, Poland. They had a suburb in Warsaw called New Jerusalem, and he kicked them out. Now, the Lubomirskis, were very prominent people in Warsaw. They were philanthropists, patriots, patrons of the city of art, patrons of this, patrons of that. They were, pretty good people. An earlier Lubomirsky, the Battle of Vienna, the Siege of Vienna, the courts of Vienna, the gates of Vienna, rather. The Ottomans were attacking, and an alliance of white nations, the Holy Roman Empire, nations belonging to that, and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth came to help. And he was the him and his knights were the first people to get there. Now, let me say, so 1775, Lubomirsky expels the Jews from Warsaw. And in revenge, the Jews began to agitate for Russia to invade. 1794, Russia invaded, occupied Warsaw. So this is what the Jews do. You see, they, if you expel them, they work to destroy you. They work to destroy you.
Well, that's what happened here, isn't it? Isn't it? You know, we expelled them in 1290, and then they came back in the 15th or the 16th century, killed our king, put their own king on the throne, and then got given the tender to the Bank of England, and they've run the Bank of England ever since, and used it to usurp all power from the crown to the City of London, and export usury all around the world. And look at the state of our people today and compare it to how they were in 1290. And I think we were far better off back then in 1290, to tell you the truth.
Yes, yes. I'll quote a line from The Jew in English Poetry and Drama. It says here, "They came over in considerable numbers during the Norman period, and subsequently, as in all other countries where they ever settled, played an important part in determining and regulating the economic condition of the kingdom." So there we are, from the horse's own mouth. This is Charles B. Mabon writing about the Jews, how wonderful they are. And he says, basically, they control your economy and they regulate your economy. You're stuffed, mate. You know. Anyway, on this similar sort of issue, Jews and people expelling Jews. I mean, you know, everyone thinks of Jews being expelled and they think of Germany, don't they? Well, in 1933, on this day, a combined National Socialist parade, SS and SA, they paraded past, this is in Berlin, and they paraded past Karl Liebknecht House. Now, this is on the corner of Alexanderplatz and Bulowplatz, as it was called then. Remember, last week we did a on this day, and the Freikorps very, very courageously put down a communist rebellion. And in doing this, they killed Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg. Because liberals, they can't even prevent a communist revolution, never mind put it down. So it was up to volunteers, you know, people like you and me who put them down. And 1933, the National Socialists were doing well in the polls. They weren't in power yet. They had people in government. They were doing well. And as a show of force, they marched past Karl Liebknecht House. This is interesting because this house is the headquarters of the Communist Party in Germany. It is now the headquarters of Die Linke, which is basically the current Communist Party in Germany. And they're about the fourth biggest party in Germany. And the head of it is a member of the Stasi. And this Bulowplatz, it has had various name changes. When the Germans got into power, when Hitler got into power, it was changed from the name of the square. Let me get this right now. It was Bulowplatz, and then it got changed to Horst Wessel Square, nice. And what have you. And then it got Horst Wessel Platz. That's right. And then it was then the sort of communists invaded, didn't they? And then it was called the Liebknecht Platz. And then they thought, no, let's call it the Luxemburg Platz. But people confused it with the country. It wasn't obvious enough. And they changed it to Rosa Luxemburg Platz. And it's still called the Rosa Luxemburg Platz. You know, disgusting. So this is quite interesting.
Shameful. After considering what they did to them.
You know, Yeah, and Nastasi, you know, they were, this is the Soviet, the East German communist secret police, shall we say. So when the communists rolled over Europe and they took over all these countries, they installed a puppet government. And there was a vicious son of a bar steward called Erich Milke, the master of fear. Now, he was born in a Jewish area of Berlin. We don't know whether he was Jewish or not, but he certainly did all he was told by his Soviet masters. And there's actually an interesting quote by Simon Wiesenthal. Simon Wiesenthal, here we are, we're quoting Simon Wiesenthal on Radio Aryan, listeners. Don't run away.
Not
don't,
very
don't
often we have
stations.
That.
He said, as far as being ruthless and deadly and horrible to their own people, the Stasi was worse than the Gestapo. All right, so there we have Simon Wiesenthal saying something quite interesting. But of course, so they marched past this house, the SANSS, and they marched on to the grave of Horst Wessel and dedicated the grave there. And if you go to this place now, Alexanderplatz, Rosa Luxemburgplatz. I mean, this tells you who's in power in Germany now. It's still called Rosa Luxemburgplatz, for heaven's sake, you know. This tells you. So that's that. We can now have a look at... Oh, and by the way, Antifa were formed in 1932 in that building as well. They were formed because the previous group, which is called the Red Street Fighters Front, whatever they call themselves, were banned along with lots of other groups, and they formed Antifa there.
Lots of evil history. Lots of evil history in that house. That's a real horror house, isn't it?
Needs demolishing, doesn't it? Or needs renaming. Definitely. When we get in power, we'll call it Sven Longshank's house, I think.
That would be good.
Anyway, but let's look at people who were born and died this year. So Sir Walter Raleigh was born, 1552. John Donne, the poet, 1573. Lord Byron, 1788, liberator of Greece. Lord Byron, the poet, went to fight for the Greeks to help them free themselves from non-white control, the Ottomans. August Strindberg, born 1849. He was he wrote a book called Chandala, actually, which was interesting. Little book, Chandala, if you get hold of that. Interesting about the combat between whites and non-whites. W. Drew Griffith, the film director, was born in 1875. He did the film Birth of a Nation. And Robert E. Howard, my favorite author and poet. Robert E. Howard, who created Conan the Barbarian. He was born in 1906. Well worth checking out his poetry if you like poetry.
This has been a really busy week in history. I know it's been a busy week in this current year as well. I know we had some excitement last week. I really wanted to get a report from you on what went on in the courthouse on Friday, because I heard on Thursday that some of the young lads and the young lass who've been accused of being members of National Action were going to be in court that day. It was a surprise thing. We didn't know about this. We only heard 24 hours before, and I was unable to put out a call on the radio to ask for supporters to go. So I wanted to apologise for that, and also to see if we could find out from you if you know what happened in the courthouse that day.
Right. Well, it was all shrouded in mystery. It was almost like they wanted no one to go there. They didn't want anyone to see what's going on. Basically, it was the Old Bailey, which is the Central Criminal Court of Britain, London. The Old Bailey, number 7. On top of the Old Bailey, you have the justice there. She's blindfolded with the scales of justice and a sword in one hand and the scales in the other. Justice should be seen to be done and heard to be done. But of course, that's not the modern world under our Jewish tyranny. And they've got a grotty sort of horrible... Most courts in Britain are damn ugly, and modern courts, they're ugly things. I mean, it just reflects the state of British justice, really. And you go in this side entrance, and it's an alley, when you get searched, and your phone gets taken off you, and blah, blah, blah. And you go into the court, and it's you sit in the public gallery, and they've put these big white screens up, big white room dividers, so you cannot see what's going on. Which is bizarre, but it's obviously to do
with
terrorism.
Was that to do with informers, do you think? And people to do with the intelligence services? They didn't want them to be identified?
Your guess is as good as mine, but Yes, yes, that's a very good guesstimate of what's going on. That's the only conceivable reason. What you could see was the television screens that showed this, the people who were being accused. And they seemed fairly confident. One of them looked contemptuous at the proceedings, you know. There was a girl. Now, all these people were – it was basically a quick hearing. They came – they were in prison, and they were the video link up to the court, and they, you know, didn't say anything, really, just not guilty. And but they're all remanded until June. A trial will take place in June in Birmingham. These are six people who've done nothing wrong. They've just been on the internet, chatting on the internet. They're new to the movement. They don't even belong to anything. They're just, you know, random people who've probably been trapped by undercover operation, a government operation. The government does this with the Muslims. They put some Muslim guy supposedly online, and he chats to people, and he gets them to say things that are bad, and then they arrest them.
So you think maybe that these are people that are not known to any nationalists, and that some undercover operative might have encouraged them and then said, do you want to join National Action?
Not even that. Probably just some sort of positive comment of National Action, something like that. We're all speculating here. We don't really know, but it seems very strange. They're all put in prison, committed no crime, their doors kicked down, their doors left wide open, and they're dragged away. Anyone could burgle their house, anyone could walk in and steal things. Unless you've got good neighbours to look after you, you're in trouble. Now, one of these people was a lady, Claudia Patella, a Portuguese national. She was given bail, right, under strict conditions. You know, she has got a curfew and all this sort of thing. Can't use mobile phone, can't use internet, can't use computer. And she was only given bail because this lady has got a two-month-old baby. Now, that wasn't reported in any of the press reports. The press reports are all the same, so it's obviously something they've issued from the court. You can say this and nothing else. I mean, that's quite an important bit of news, that this woman who's been dragged from her home in the middle of the night, and she's got a two-month-old baby, and this is ridiculous.
Accused of being a terrorist with a two-month-old baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this is the regime we live under. Ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you know, let's talk about some real terrorists. What about Mossad? I mean, 1979 on this day, Mossad assassinated Abu Hassan, Ali Hassan al-Salameh, the Red Prince in Lebanon. He was chief of ops of Black September, 39 years old. Also founded Force 17, which is like a specialist commando group of Fatah, which was the PLO. And he was assassinated. He was born in Jaffa, and of course his family was kicked off the land and taken by Israelis. And he was accused of being a planner, you know, planning terrorism. The attack on the Munich Olympics, 1972. And a Mossad gang went around trying to kill him, and they killed a waiter in Norway by mistake. It's called the Lillehammer Affair. And a lot of their agents were arrested and kicked out. And he's mentioned in Viktor Ostrovsky's book, By Way of Deception, because what they did, they used these British passports to kill him. There was a woman called Erica Mary Chambers. That's supposedly her name. And she was a Mossad agent who, bit of a honey trap, she befriended him. So be careful, listeners, if a dark lady comes up to you and starts being very attentive and trying to seduce you, beware of the honey trap.
Yeah, well, we've already had problems last year, didn't we, with women trying to infiltrate nationalist groups. And they spent a year. They went after Anne-Marie Waters, Julie Lake, Mark Collett, various people that they tried to entrap. Basically, to record stuff for ITV, record them saying things that they say on their YouTube videos anyway. I mean, it was a real own goal for them. But the important thing about it was that they used three women to do this, and they paid them for the whole year to try and infiltrate nationalist groups. So they will Sven, use women.
Sven, like as a nationalist leader, I can vouch for this. Women will be throwing themselves at you all the time. And the only thing, look, it happens all the time, you know. Don't become a nationalist leader. Women throw themselves at you. Enemy agents, left, right, and centre. Oh, you know, some really good-looking ones as well. Resist, be good, you know. Yeah, so Erica Chambers, her car had an bomb in it, and as the convoy went past, boom, it was blown up, you know, and he was killed. And 20,000 people attended his funeral. And Timothy Renton, the Foreign Office Minister in Britain, he carpeted the Israeli ambassador over Mossad using fake British passports. And they promised to the British government, we will never do it again. And we have believed them, of course, don't we? Yes, so there we are. Interesting.
They've done it again,
yeah.
But not just for the British. They've done it again, but not just for the British. Well, haven't we got a what strange madness is this to look
what
into?
What fresh lunacy is this?
What fresh lunacy is this? Sorry.
Well, this is just so lunatic. It's beyond lunacy. National Health Service is government funded. It's taxpayer funded. It's the health service in Britain, and they issue guidelines to doctors, nurses, surgeons, and people who screen for cancer, cervical smear tests, breast cancer, and this book has. Told. Wait for it. You're sitting down at home. Sit down. Please sit down. Don't want you falling down and hurting yourself. This has the new ruling to all NHS hospitals and service centres says that men who self-identify as women must be given breast scans for cancer. Let that sink in a second now. Men who haven't got a breast but believe they are women or have had a sex change, who are on the way to having a sex change, whatever these transgender type people are, they're not going to get breast cancer because they haven't got breasts, not real breasts. But they're going to be scanned for breast cancer, right? Okay, let me just get that into your head. And then, hang on, men who think they are women are going to be offered cervical smear tests, and I haven't got a cervix.
Completely lunacy.
And here we go. This is bonkers, right? Women. Oh, I just can't get my head around this. Women who self-identify as men, right? So these are women who become men or are becoming men or. Well, mentally ill, let's face it. But anyway.
Mentally ill, mentally ill.
They are complaining because they're not being offered breast scans or cervical smears. Hang on a minute. These women claim they are men, but they still want breast scans because they've got breasts still. Oh, some sort of breast maybe have been. I don't even want to think about this, really. But this is all the money, all the time, all the danger it's putting people in who are not getting their. Operations or their tests because they're too busy faffing around with these transgenders. It's nonsense. I mean, you know, the worst thing you can do in society today is to offend somebody. That's the worst thing you can do. Well, only if you can offend white people, that's fine. You know, offend patriots, fine. But if you offend a minority, a protected, vulnerable minority, you are in trouble. Big trouble. Which leads me on nicely to White Hero of the Week. White Heroes of the Week. We've got two this week, a man and a woman. Now, first of all, the woman. And I'm looking at her photograph here. She is Mary Hassell. And she is the senior coroner for Inner London since 2013. She looks quite attractive, really. You know, what she's done is she's stood up to the Jews. Not only the Jews, she stood up to the Muslims. Because the Muslim faith and the Jewish faith, they want to get their people buried quickly. It's to do with religion. They bury them quickly for some reason. I don't know why. Which means they've got to jump the queue over white people or any other people who aren't Jewish or Muslim. And she was saying, no, you've got to wait in the queue. I can't, you know, give you preferential treatment. And they've gone berserk. They're calling for her blood. They went to a meeting with her and she gave them a dressing down. Think of a secondary school teacher, and then you've got Mary Hassell, a young secondary school teacher, you know, Miss Jean Brodie, quite attractive. I wonder if she's married. We'll find out for our listeners whether she's married or not. But Mary Hassell, the senior coroner for Inner North London, said, "There is a difference between being sensitive to faith and prioritizing one person because of their religion." So there we are. She's holding her ground. The Jews have called for it to be sacked. The Muslims have called for it to be sacked. And she's not being sacked so far.
Fantastic.
So, well done to her. Well done to her.
Good woman. That's really good to hear. Something just as so simple as that, as saying we should not be prioritizing one group over the other. And that's what it boils down to in everything. But nobody will say that. What a brave woman. What a brave woman. What was her name again, Jez?
Mary. Good Catholic name. Mary Hassel.
Mary
Hassel won't take no hassle. You can't Definitely. Hassle Mary Hassel.
Definitely. Good woman. No. What was the other one?
The other one, right, this is a bit more distressing for us. Now, when basically what happened is an ex-soldier, he'd served 12 years in the British Army, and he was homeless. He was living on the streets of Edinburgh. And I actually met him, actually. He's begging on the streets of Edinburgh. He was a former tankie, served in the Royal Tank Regiment. Darren Greenfield, 47 years old, and he used to, by Waverley Station, named after one of the Walter Scott novels in Edinburgh, central Edinburgh, right in the centre of Edinburgh. He would sit outside there with a little bit of cardboard, written on this bit of cardboard, his number, 24710298, that's his army number, something you never forget, your army number, it's drilled into you, and he wrote on this, "Soldier in need, please help. Thank you. God bless." So, and he'd wear his old army jacket, though. So everyone sort of knew him. He was homeless, despite serving 12 years in the British Army. And he died over Christmas, froze to death on an Edinburgh street just before Christmas. Right? Now, think about this, right? Think about this man, right? He's British. His ancestors are British. His great-grandparents. He's going back generations. Probably to the Battle of Basingstoke in 879. And the British government, the regime that rules Britain, right, can't afford to house him or to look after him, but it can afford to invite 500,000 non-white invading immigrants into Britain and house them, clothe them, feed them, give them benefits for the rest of their lives and to their descendants. It can afford to give foreign aid to foreign countries left, right and centre. It can afford to give free sex changes on the NHS to people. It can afford to fund the Commission for Racial Equality, the Equalities Commission, and a whole industry of nonsense pushing the Jewish liberal agenda. It can afford to do all this. Right? It can afford to give money to the European Union, the United Nations, and all kinds of non-government organizations. Right? But it cannot afford to look after soldiers who have served their country through war. 12 years. They're just left to starve, to freeze on Britain's streets. And when I passed this guy, you know, I thought, oh, you know, so I thought, I wonder if he really is a soldier. And he had a sort of soldierly look about him, you know. He's been 12 years in the army. This isn't like 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. 12 years. And he, you know, I chatted to him and he came off with all the stories and he knew, you know, he obviously was a soldier because there's certain words you can tell this. So I gave him a fiver and then thought, oh, that's a bit generous. But hey, you know, this was in the summer. And now he's dead, right? And nobody gives a damn about it. And government policy won't change. No. Because white men, straight white men, are not a vulnerable group. And this is how they justify to themselves our rulers. Or they justify to the people who do their dirty work for them. If you're not a vulnerable group, you don't get any help at all. To be vulnerable, you have to be non-white. You have to be non-straight. You have to be homosexual or a transgender or some other mentally ill, deficient pervert, right? You have to be Jewish. But if you're white, you're straight, you are going to be on the street starving, freezing to death. Doesn't matter what you've done for your country. So do you.
So, you're on your own.
Radio Aaron salutes our ex-soldiers. We salute you, Darren Greenfield.
We certainly do. And just so that we finish on a positive note, we've just been talking about there about heroes of the white race. Well, we've got some heroines of the white race as well. We've just had a team. Yeah, a team of six women have just walked all the way to Antarctic unaided. That's the first time that women have ever done it. And I saw this on TV and I thought, oh no, here we go again, another load of feminists. And I was expecting to see brown faces, black faces, and they weren't. They were all white faces, and they all looked pretty good, actually. So we can be proud of that, I think. Six women walking to Antarctic and then coming back again. So there we go, anyway. And also, hats off to your soldier friend there. And all these other things that we've heard about today, Jez, I think are absolutely fantastic. There's so much information that we've fitted into the podcast today. I believe we're not going to be making one next Monday, but we'll be back the Monday after. Thank you for coming on, Jez. I'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'll be back tomorrow with Nat Danelaw. Thank you, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory.